Welcome to Senate State Affairs. The time is 9:08, and we have present for the record Senators Bundy, Stevens, French, and myself, McGuire. And we have two items on the agenda today. Sorry, I don't have the date. What is the date today?
19th.
Okay, it's the 19th of February. And the first up is Senate Bill 185, which we have heard before. Sex offender child kidnapper registration by Senator Wilikowski. And this went back to the Department of Public Safety for some vetting. And we have a CS before us. If I could have a motion. Senator Bundy, thank you.
Move, we use as our working draft CS for House Senate Bill 185 / Mike Luck updated 213.
Okay, is there an objection to adopting version M? Hearing and seeing none, we have M before us. Okay, Senator Wilikowski, you want to walk through the compromise that you came to?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. And we tried to incorporate many of the things that the committee members had asked for. We worked with public safety pretty in depth to get what we think is a good compromise bill at this point. Section 1 simply is a provision that makes it a crime to fail to register your internet address. Section 2, a little bit of cleanup. If you look at lines 14 through 22, there's some thes and ands, and I think that's just cleanup. The real bulk of the change is on line 24, I think. Page 3, lines 4 through 6 is the section that is not cleanup, the additional section. And that just provides that you have to register your email or instant messaging addresses or other internet communication identifiers. Section 3 it provides, it's the same requirement that sex offenders have to undergo right now. When they change their residence, they have to register within the next working day. And we made that the same for changing your email address. And I know speaking with some of the people in Department of Public Safety, there is actually a very high percentage of people that register. I think it's over, it's about 89% of people actually do comply, so there is very high compliance. Section 4 is, the changes that were made in response to the committee members. Senator, there was some concern about whether or not we make this public. Should we just have it out there on a database where everyone can go and look at this giant list? What we decided to do, and I think this is a fair compromise, is it will be publicly available, but you'll have to type in the specific email address, and then it will show you if that person is a sex offender or not. The language looks a little bit loose, but let me explain why we did it the way we did it. And I'm talking about lines 22 through 25. It says the department may provide a method for or may participate in a federal program that allows the public to submit an electronic or messaging address, et cetera, et cetera. The reason we have may instead of shall is because there's a federal program that is starting up this summer, and it is anticipated, and I think the Department of Public Safety can verify this, that it will be a free program. It will be available to all the states, no charge, and the state intends to access that program and use it. The concern is, what if something happens and that program doesn't come available, and we've required them to either use that federal program or create one wholesale, which will have significant fiscal costs. That's why we left it a little bit loose, but the department feels comfortable with this language. It is their intent to have a database up and running by January 1, 2009 on this.
Okay.
The next section, next lines 26 to 31, page 3, this is in response to Senator Stevens' request. We wanted to make this information available to internet service providers and internet security firms to assist them in identifying and preventing communications with registered sex offenders. And so that provision does allow the department to do that. Section 5 is applicability and the dates. as far as the dates go, again, the department has every intent of getting this up and running as quickly as possible. They were concerned about finances, obviously, and about the prospect of getting something up and running very quickly. And they wanted to wait for this federal software to come out and have time to implement it and get it up and running without any mistakes and errors. So what we decided to do was have it begin registering everyone beginning January 1, 2009. And sex offenders, as their reports become due, will have to, at that time, report their email addresses. And again, what it's a cost savings measure in one part. The worst sex offenders are required to report quarterly. So the latest that the worst sex offenders will have to supply this information would be in March of 2009. Some of the sex offenders who aren't considered as heinous, I guess, possibly could register later. And that was a policy decision that we made to keep the cost down. And so with that, I'll open it up to any questions people might have. And we have Annie Carpinetti here, and I think their public safety is online as well to address any questions that you might have.
Hey, thank you very much, Senator Wilikowski, especially for responding to the concerns of the committee that were raised. Questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just so I understand this, Senator, the beginning on line 15 on page 3, you go through the various forms of communication, and you lose me after electronic mail address. I understand what that is. Okay, I have one of those. But what are the others? We're requiring them, if they establish or change any of these things, could you give us a definition of instant messaging address or what other internet communication identifiers might be?
Thank you. We had some discussion about that, and perhaps Department of Public Safety is in a better situation to address that. But it's our intent to include email addresses, instant, and I don't use my computer for these things, so I'm probably not the best thing. I use email, that's it. But instant messaging addresses, there's the capability to type in your computer and someone will receive it instantaneously, and you can have kind of a chat going back and forth.
Is that like a cell phone? I mean, I do that with my children occasionally. You just...
A text message?
Is that a text message? No, that wouldn't be that, would it?
Well, if you were using the internet, then it would be included within that. But you'd have to have... Yeah, and actually, you know, cell phones is an interesting point. And we hadn't addressed cell phones on this. I guess if you know, it would come down to what's an electronic mail address, and perhaps maybe we can get someone from law up here to give us a little better perspective on that. But this was really mainly for the internet. And cell phones, that's an interesting question, Senator. Internet communication identifiers would include things like MySpace, Facebook, which are places, and I know this has been a huge, huge concern for those companies, that there are sexual predators who are online and are convicted. In Alaska, I just attended many attended the Flint Waters presentation last week, but I just attended a public safety finance subcommittee meeting, and Commissioner Monaghan just said they believe there are about 16,000 sexual predators in Alaska alone that are using the internet to communicate with people. So perhaps Ms. Carpinetti can give us some kind of a better clue as to what instant messaging addresses, internet communication identifiers might include.
Kathy, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Did you follow the line of questioning?
Yes.
Okay. If you could put your name on the record. We know who you are, and then respond.
For the record, my name is Kathy Monfreda. I am the Chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau for the Department of Public Safety, which includes the management of the Sex Offender Registry. The question regarding what types of identifiers are possible, as the Senator indicated, networking sites, Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, gaming websites, which there's a lot of those, chat room names, those types of things. Cell phones do not use the internet, so text messaging wouldn't be included.
Okay, does that further? Senator French.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question. Hi, Kathy. It's Hollis French here in Juneau. I understand instant messaging address, but internet communication identifier, do you think that's explicit enough to specifically capture those individuals who masquerade as a different person on social networking websites like Facebook and MySpace?
Through the chair, Senator French, I'm not sure that, you know, there's any way to prevent somebody from giving a false identifier or pretending they're somebody else other than who they are.
No, well, maybe you misunderstood my question. I know we can't prevent them from doing that, just like you can't prevent someone from taking an innocuous email address like, you know, drummer, you know, 900 or you know, my dude, you know, whatever.
Where did that
we need to hear more.
I shouldn't think off the top of my head. That's clearly not my strength. Internet. We're on the subject. But people invent email addresses and prevent and this clearly captures those. You have to register that sort of anonymous email address. But my question is if someone were, you know, you hear about predators masquerading as teenagers on MySpace, right? They set up a web page that makes them look like a teenager so they can establish chats and communications with other teenagers. And so the question is would not registering that alias, if you will, on the internet be a violation of this law? That is, it's something to hang a person with, having not registered that. If they want to be in compliance with the law, they got to say, look, my alter ego is, you know, Sally 16 from Spinard, right? And that's you know, that would be sort of quote unquote legal, if you will. It'd be wrong, but it'd be, I guess, legal. But the point is that alter ego would be registered somewhere. I guess that's the point I'm messily groping towards.
Through the chair, we agree. That would be one of the addresses that they have to report.
Kathy Monfreda. Kathy, this is Liesl here. What are any other states experimenting? We talked in Judiciary a couple years ago about the ankle monitors and the proximity, you know, the different spaces you were allowed and not. I'm just thinking in my mind quickly. Are there any states that are experimenting with some type of bracelet that would send a signal if people are interfacing with the internet or things like that?
I don't recall. I can't think of any that coming up in any conversation in any meetings that we've been at, and I'm not even sure that's technologically possible.
And I don't know. I just, every time we get into the discussion of sex offenders and, you know, the recidivism rate being what it is, my hope is that technology inventions and so forth will catch up with the concept of keeping these folks away from our children. But I just wondered if there were any conferences you'd attended where there's anything unique that...
Sorry about that. Through the chair, Madam Chair, no, that's not something that's come up in any of the meetings I've been at.
Okay. So we're just still trying to keep people honest by registering with the right name and the right email address and so forth.
Unfortunately, yes.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Kathy, could you help me here? So I understand electronic mail address, that I use and understand that. I understand the other communication identifiers, and because you said that's like MySpace or Facebook, but I'm not quite sure what instant messaging addresses are. Could you explain that?
Through the chair, I'll try. There's ways online that you can directly connect to another address, person, whatever, and chat back and forth while you're doing other things on your computer.
So is that like a chat room? That's what we hear it called. Is that what that means?
No.
Sort of. It's instead of it being a chat room. A chat room is where many people are communicating at the same time. Instant messaging is between two places.
It would be like, Senator Stevens, if you had your BlackBerry on, and it were linked to your, let's say, Yahoo account, and you had an instant message ID on Yahoo, and you wanted to instant message me, I would receive it right here in real time. And you could say something like, boy, Senator French is on today. And I could respond back and say,
or off.
He sure is. And
he didn't take his head.
And then chat.
We often say that.
But we do. But, and then chat rooms, wholly different thing where people go in and are those covered under the bill? I guess they are.
I would think they would be covered under Internet Communication Identifier.
You have to sign in as a person, so, or as an identifier.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if I could follow up on
this. Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you. I appreciate what you're saying, and I understand we're trying to stop these offenders from establishing. Well, no, we're not trying to stop them from establishing or changing. We're saying if they establish or change, they have to report it. Is that, that's right, I think. So I'm just wondering, is this practical? I mean, are we asking for too much here? I can clearly understand electronic mail address. You want to have that. Someone could potentially have hundreds of identifiers, couldn't they? I'm just wondering if that becomes unenforceable.
Just thinking from my days as a DA, they've been convicted of a sex crime, and you can pretty much ask these folks to do almost. I mean, you can restrict their geographic movements. You can restrict the people with whom they have contact. You can make them report, to their probation officer, changes of address. I think this is, just taking that to the next level. I think it's entirely defensible. I imagine the Department of Law would say so. And while it may be, while some people may avoid the law, it also gives you a hook. It gives you a place to prosecute them for not registering that address when they're beginning their grooming practices or beginning their sort of reaching out to new victims.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense. I think I understand it. It's a lot, though,
Ms. Monfreda, while you have us here on the hook, you and I had a conversation last week, and you were polite, but this is my bill requiring sex offenders to register with the DMV, which is something a lot of states are doing under the Adam Walsh Act. And I think your point was keep doing these little things, but it's not sort of the 30,000-foot view. Do you want to summarize what you talked to me about?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure what point it is you're wanting me to make. Our concern was that because DMV and DPS are two separate parts of two separate departments.
Actually, your point was that you were fairly clear that you guys had been doing a lot of work toward getting people registered, and that you felt that really it was more, if anything, resources that you needed than more policies.
Thank you for reminding me. Yes, that's correct. We already have 89% or 90% compliance with the law, and we are continuing to increase our efforts to to clean up how we get these things done and track people. And it's very labor intensive to do that. Public safety is working hard to go out and make contacts. The problem is that there's a shortage of police officers statewide to be able to send somebody to a reported residence address unless we know we have reason to think they're not there. It's hard to get law enforcement to go and check it out. And regardless of that, they're still doing it as time allows. We provide a list each month of registers who are out of compliance, and we send it to all the law enforcement agencies, including the troopers, and they have been able to verify that they're there or verify that they're not and follow up on it already, and we hope to continue that in the future.
So I think it's just a combination. These are the kinds of things that help highlight the issue, but what I got out of the conversation was that, for the legislature to keep our eye on the resources issue as much as anything, because we can make a lot of great policies, but if the resources aren't there to, to carry them through, then
That's correct. And if an offender goes to DMV and is turned away, then what? We know that they're still not registered.
Okay, further questions for Ms. Monfreda? And then Lieutenant Dial is also on the line. Lieutenant, did you want to testify or just answer questions today?
Madam Chair, I am online, and for the record, my name is Lieutenant Rodney Dial with the Alaska State Troopers. I'm stationed in Ketchikan, and I just want to say we do support SB 185, specifically with the changes, and do believe that it's extremely important that this information not be made readily available for these individuals to trade. Our investigators know for an absolute certainty that that's how they're getting most of their illegal information, is trading it between each other. So we support this bill. We think it's another step that will that we can use. We can specifically use it when we're making an investigation into the sex offender for another issue and do a forensic examination of their computer. And we may be able to link failure to register an email address through that forensic examination. So we think this is another valuable tool, and we do support the bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Lieutenant. Questions for Lieutenant Dial? Okay, hearing and seeing none, is there anyone else here in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 185? Anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, that brings the CS back before us. Is there further committee discussion? Senator Stevens.
If you're ready for a motion.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move the CS for Senate Bill number 185 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 185 has moved. Okay, that brings us to Senate Bill 202 and Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really have nothing else to add on this unless there's questions by the committee members. We did meet with we've had further discussions with DMV, and I guess the bill is pretty straightforward in what it's intending to do. It's not our intent to in any way to hinder the state's ability to detect forged licenses or to otherwise strengthen on its own our driver's licenses. It's not the intent at all. The bill does have another referral to judiciary, and if there's a better technical way of writing it, I'd certainly be open to that, and maybe that's a good committee to do that in. But I really don't have anything else to add unless there's questions.
Questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Bundy?
Just a statement, if I could. I wasn't here last week when one of the people who was testifying on this bill made some interesting implications using the term good German, apparently suggesting that anyone who opposed this had Nazi tendencies. I'm reading into what I had heard. For the record, my grandfather did come from Germany, and so I assume he was a good German. But the point I'd like to make, and I hope this person is listening because it's a question I would have asked them, is it possible to look at, for two people to look at the same set of facts, come away with different opinions, and still be a good American?
Yes.
And so I'm very resentful of the implication that if I don't blindly follow that person's fact pattern or reasoning, somehow I'm deficient in my patriotism. I hope that wasn't their intent, but if it was, they were misguided. I see two issues here. One, should the state be involved in helping fund a federal program? And that is a valid issue and one that is worthy of discussion. The secondary issue is, should we have a national ID, or should we have somehow way to validate our identification via driver's license. I can't help but note in the previous bill we just passed, it's very important that the sex offender or child kidnappers have a driver's license number. Now, we surely want a valid driver's license in that case, one that a driver's license that was applied for and established under some verifiable criteria, and not, as too often is the case now, a false identity. I surely see in a society like today where we have passports, we have real ID, if you will, with chips in them. So I don't buy into the second half of the real ID idea that it is somehow a black helicopter conspiracy to destroy our privacy. It's part of a complex society that we live in, and that unfortunately we're required to prove that we are who we claim we are for the betterment of our society. So I still have the same problem. We can protest mightily. However, if we are not willing to provide our citizens with a valid identification that is approved of by the federal government, they are not going to get on an airplane, they're not going to go into a federal facility, and we may have a temporary feel-good reaction to defying these requirements, but in the end, I believe we would just cause our citizens to have unnecessary problems. So that would be a long way to round to say that I object to the bill.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Okay, other questions for Senator Wilikowski? Okay, thank you. We have Whitney Brewster and Carrie Hennings with the DMV. One of the main things I wanted to do today was hear Kevin Brooks was on deck last hearing and had indicated that there were some things the DMV was implementing already that this bill could put in jeopardy. And so I wanted to hear from the DMV as to what it was that you felt fell into that category. So Whitney, do you want to, or Carrie?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster. I'm the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Before I begin my testimony, I just thought it would be useful for the committee members to know that Alaska has indeed sought an extension to comply with the Real ID Act and has received formal notice we did on Friday that our extension has been granted. So now over 40 states have submitted extensions, and effective December 31st, 2009, that initial extension will terminate unless we no later than October 11th, 2009, submit to the Department of Homeland Security a second request. And that's when we have to show that we have met material compliance, which I believe the members may have this information in their packets. It's the material compliance benchmarks, there are about 18 of them. If we were to be granted that second extension, it would bring us through May 10th of 2011. So one of the requirements, the Department of Homeland Security chose a phased-in approach to meeting the requirements of Real ID. And Real ID compliant driver's license and IDs must, for individuals who are 50 years of age or under, they have to have those IDs no later than December 1 of 2014. So those folks who are under 50 will need to have that driver's license by 2014. For those who are over 50, it's 2017. So I just thought that that would be useful information because those dates are quite a ways off, and it should hopefully allow people sufficient time. But one thing that is required is for our IDs and driver's license to have three levels of security. One is overt, which can be seen with the naked eye. Covert, which can be seen utilizing an instrument like a black light. And the third one is forensic, which means that we would be required to use a material that is not commercially available. The DMV has two levels of security currently on the driver's licenses. Those are overt and covert. We do not have the forensic security. If the card is not compliant, we would have to print on there clearly on its face that it may not be accepted by any federal agency for federal identification or official purpose. And it would have to have a unique design or color to alert federal agencies and law enforcement that it couldn't be accepted for those purposes. The cards are required to include full legal name, which we do, date of birth. We also have that gender, that as well. A unique driver's license or ID number, which our licenses currently have, a digital photograph, which we also currently have, a person's address of principal residence, which currently we collect that data, but we do not print it on the actual card. So that would be a change that would be required. A signature, which we do currently have now. physical security features to prevent tampering, which we have now on our licenses and ID cards. A common machine-readable technology, that barcode, the 2D barcode, which we currently have, and that is that barcode is what is most commonly used by law enforcement, that 2D barcode, which we do have. The date of transaction, essentially the date they get their ID or driver's license, which we have on the card currently. The expiration date, which we currently have on the card, and the state or territory of issuance, which we also have on the card. So the only thing right now that is required on the card that is lacking from an informational standpoint is that address of principal residence. We do not have that data currently printed. We print the mailing address on the driver's license and ID card currently. Another requirement of Real ID is legal presence, and as you all know, SB 215 was heard in this committee and passed. The majority of states have passed legal presence bills. I think there are about six right now that do not have legal presence, our state being one of them. Ongoing fraud training would be required under Real ID. The DMV does indeed already go through this training, and so that is something that we are already doing and would like to continue doing because it's a very useful training in spotting documents that have been altered or that are counterfeit. The Real ID Act also requires verification of source data by electronic means. And by that, it means we are required to verify electronically a birth certificate with vital statistics, for instance, if we are if that is indeed a valid document. States would be required under the final regulations to verify immigration documents through the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlement System. It's called SAVE. If in the event that what we have in front of us does not match what is currently in that system, we would not issue a real ID driver's license or ID card, and we would refer that individual to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services for resolution. Right now, that system, the SAFE system, exists. It's being tested. I don't believe that it is. They've hammered out all of the kinks in that system. We are not hooked up to that system. States also have to verify Social Security numbers with the Social Security Administration. And in the event, again, of a non-match, we would not issue a real ID driver's license and ID card and would refer that person to Social Security to resolve the issue. We currently are hooked up to the Social Security Administration. We do Social Security number matches. The third system that we would be required to hook up to would be the Electronic Verification of Vital Events system. It's called EVE. This is through Vital Statistics. We are not hooked up currently to that system, nor is Vital Statistics in the Department of Health and Social Services. They have not hooked up to their national database yet. So we are currently not hooked up to that system. We would also be required to verify real ID driver's licenses and ID cards with other states to make sure that another real ID had not been issued in another state, and if so, they would be required to surrender that ID when they get one in our state. Right now, that system doesn't exist. There are grants available to create a hub so that the states could interact, but so far, that system just doesn't exist. Real ID would require states to have a security plan that would address physical security of the facilities used to produce driver's license and IDs, privacy policy regarding personally identifiable information. It would require employee background checks. It would require periodic training and security awareness for me and my staff. And those are a few of the things that the security plan would be required to contain. And that plan would have to be approved through the Department of Homeland Security. That's about all I have at this time. I would like to inform the committee that the department, the division, does not have the necessary funding to fully comply with Real ID. There are some things that we are currently doing that we would like to continue doing, because we think that they're a good idea and they've proven effective. But bottom line, the division would be back before the legislature requesting funds before it could comply fully with Real ID. So.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Brewster. Questions? Senator Bundy, then Stevens, then French.
Under our current law, a person who moves from another state is required to surrender their previous license if they get an Alaskan license. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, yes, that is correct.
And is there a period of time with which they are, once they establish residency here, that that they're required to get a new license versus their old one?
Yes, Senator Bundy, that's 90 days.
90 days. And then, but a vehicle license is only 30, isn't it?
That's correct.
Where we make money, we are a little more of a hurry than where it costs us money. And as I understood the list of the things that you already do, the only thing you don't do is put the resident address on, which I assume would not be a costly item.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that would not be a huge cost, no. Yeah.
And so then the costs that we've heard about would be those caused by various internet or computer interconnections, is that correct?
Senator Bundy, that is correct. And any physical security modifications we would have to make to our existing offices.
Ah, yes. And do you have a ballpark cost estimate at this time?
We have Senator Bundy, we have a very, very rough estimate of approximately $2 million. But there are other agencies that Real ID affects that would not be considered in that cost estimate. For instance, Vital Statistics Database.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you help me understand the extension process? I'm a little confused about that. Have we requested an extension? Are we saying we're going to comply, but we just need more time to do it? Or have we said we have no intention of complying and we just want more time to figure out how we're not going to do it?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we haven't done either. We have sought an extension. If we had not, the regulations and the requirements of Real ID would have been in effect May 11th of 2008. We were able to file an extension through the end of 2009 by not committing either way. Like I said in my testimony, over 40 states have now submitted extensions. Many of those states have passed legislation prohibiting their states from complying with Real ID, but they have gone ahead and sought the extension. So to answer your question, we have not committed either way.
Oh, thank you. So the extension is has no bearing on us. It can't really. We're not saying we're going to do it. We're just we just have more time.
Senator Stevens, that is correct. The second extension, if we were to request a second extension at that time, we would then be required to show material compliance that indeed we do intend to comply.
Thank you.
Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brewster, my question is about the assistance we're getting to comply with federal Real ID. Are we getting any federal money? Have we received any federal money? Are we going to receive any federal money to help us implement Real ID?
Through the chair, Senator French, there are existing funds available. I believe that the Department of Homeland Security has made available $80 million to all states. The state of Alaska has not requested, nor has it received any federal funds.
Thank you. And my follow-up is more of a statement than a question. You're welcome to respond, but it seems to me that there may be ideas about making our state forms of identification more secure and more secure, I guess is the word, really, that have their own intrinsic worth that may be worth pursuing with state money, that that don't necessarily jibe with or help us comply with the Real ID Act. That is, the driver's license should be worth something. It should be, a document that can stand up to examination and should be, not easily copied, not easily faked. But and it seems to me those are all things that are worth spending state money on. But I keep going back to sort of the fundamental idea that if the federal government wants us to do certain things, to get in compliance with their rules, they should pay for it. Thank you.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, along the lines of Senator French there, going through the airline TSA recently, they're looking at our driver's license now with black light. And so my question is just out of curiosity. I've been in Alaska 40 years, and I've gone from just paper driver's license to various iterations. In the last 20 years or so, how many times do you know, or do you know how many times we've changed our driver's license to try to make it more secure, to make it less subject to fraud?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I do not know in the last 20 years how many times the driver's license has changed, but in 2004 we did move to the digital driver's license from the old version where there was a Polaroid picture underneath laminate, but that was very much an improvement to our driver's licenses, and we would like to be able to continue to implement best practices and make improvements to our documents.
And the requirement for the resident address, do you see value in for the state in that?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I believe it would likely help with perhaps law enforcement. Like I said, we do capture that information anyway, so we have that information, but it may be useful to law enforcement. One thing that I might also note is that there is an exception process for victims of domestic violence to have their residence of principal their address, their principal address, printed on that driver's license or ID card.
And just one final. And for those that don't drive, the state does issue a very similar card as the state ID card that would serve as identification for boarding airplanes, that sort of thing.
Senator Bundy, that is correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Whitney Liesel here. What is your understanding? This is a question. I mean, you've spent time working in the legislature and obviously for Lieutenant Governor. When you sit down to craft policies, what is your understanding of the legislature's viewpoint on Real ID as it stands today? So, you know, in the past few months as you've been crafting policies, what is your understanding of the legislature's policy regarding Real ID?
Madam Chairman, I'm not certain I understand your question.
Okay, let me say it more clearly. When you are going through and making decisions about driver's license requirements, do you look to Real ID? And if so, do you reflect on discussions that the legislature had, let's say, last year, or in other places, rejecting the concept of Real ID?
Madam Chairman, I have gone through and I have reviewed the testimony on Real ID. We definitely look at that and the statements that the legislature has made about Real ID. We also look at what is our existing law. And what's in our regulations. We also look at best practices from other states. American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators puts out best practices that we look at as well. But to answer your specific question, we look at what the legislature has said, and we also look at what the governor and the commissioner of administration have to say, and try to couple all of that information together.
Okay. And what I want to do, later on this, in I think probably early March, I want to have an admin reg review meeting on this. I just find it fascinating, and I commend you in trying to do your job. But there are so many different strongly held viewpoints about this, and yet you are in a situation of crafting policy, and you should be aware that some conversations have occurred in this building that lead some people to believe that the division has sort of gone ahead with implementing really the underlying tenets of Real ID in spite of or over the objections of the legislature. And I know that's a difficult line to walk. You know, what makes a driver's license better in and of itself, and yet, you know, what is something that is a direct effort at complying with a federal mandate that some disagree with. But I just encourage you to think about it, and we'll have more conversation on it later. Okay.
Madam Chairman.
Yes. Senator Breen.
When Kevin Brooks was testifying the other day, he said that when the exception was requested, it was with the understanding that the state did not intend by this waiver, this exception, to enter into implementing the Real ID Act. So it's not totally clear that they, you might want to talk to him.
Do you want, Kevin, you want to come up on the record? Yeah, and I think what I really want to draw attention to is the chatter that people have in the halls and so forth. And it is a very controversial subject. But I just want to be clear, too, that we send a message, whatever way it is, clearly. So, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kevin Brooks. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. And to the point you raised earlier, I want to be very clear that we have not just indiscriminately charged ahead with implementing the Real ID Act. In fact, we've only recently briefed the governor on this and had a sit-down face-to-face conversation with her and discussed the ramifications and the requirements of the act. And we've only gotten the rules just last month. So I really want to put your mind at ease that we have not just been charging ahead on this. We're trying to responsibly run the DMV. There was even concern last year in the discussions related to HB3 on legal presence that the department had proceeded and implemented regulations that weren't bound in statute, and that's just not true. The regs that we passed were years in the making. They were actually cleanup regs when the department or the Division of Motor Vehicles moved from the Department of Public Safety over to the Department of Administration. Again, anything that we do with implementing policies at the DMV often they have ties to something you might see in Real ID, but it couldn't be farther from the truth. We had a case, the Huntley case was brought up against the state, and we prevailed in that. The case was recently dismissed, and that was in the last month as well.
But wasn't it dismissed on a technicality? Wasn't it lack of standing on the part of the plaintiff? My understanding in reading the case is there wasn't any substantive ruling. It's a procedural.
That's accurate, but that was the ultimate outcome of the case. But and we could get our assistant attorney general before the committee if that was of interest to discuss that aspect of it. The other piece that I wanted to raise, though, was that there was some mention made of a capital appropriation that the department got of $300,000 for scanners for the Division of Motor Vehicles. We use scanners all the time in the division, but what we committed to the legislature was that we would not spend the money until we had settled some of the questions that were revolving around the Real ID Act. Now, we think it's a good idea to use those scanners, and as I say, we use them all the time. Really, more to the point of the issue is what you do you store the data that you're scanning, and then the requirements for storage that are embodied in the Real ID Act. But just to be clear and above board, we haven't spent the money. We've told people we weren't going to spend the money until the issue was cleared up. And so I hopefully these comments and my previous ones will address the concerns that you raised.
That's excellent. Yeah, I think I appreciate it all, Mr. Brooks, and I'm just raising the discussion that's out there.
We hear the chatter as well, Madam Chair.
Cast aspersions. I just want to be open about the conversation that's going on. So I appreciate it. And I think with the scanners, in the Senator Stevens resolution on the federal level, the concern is that some of the folks in Real ID have envisioned the scanners as sort of a human tracking device. And I think that's the concern that you are hearing people raise in the building about scanners.
And those scanners are, I've likened it, when I go into the State Office building yesterday, when the office was closed, I can wave my wallet because I have a card in here that has a chip and it lets me in the building. And that there is some concern that that same kind of chip could be used in a driver's license.
Yeah.
doesn't work with my driver's license, but it does with the other card. But the scanners we're talking about are desktop scanners for scanning documents, and okay. And so not the kind that
and
would read a code or the RF chip, or I can't remember the exact terminology that was discussed at the last hearing.
Okay, great. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue of the extension, so we have gotten a temporary extension to May of 2009 by saying we're not making any commitment, we're going to do this, but we just need more time. So that's, I think Whitney explained that. And
December 31st of 2009.
December 31st of 2009. But that is a real come-to-Jesus moment in December 31st of 2009, because as she has said, we at that point, we need to, if we ask for another extension, we have to show that we're making material advances.
Yes.
That's going to be, I mean, how do we get to that point? Because, you know, I see real problems with the whole Real ID. I mean, I think there are a lot of state legislators around the country that are just wondering if this is really the way we want to go. And they oppose it in many ways, and they're sort of glomming onto this issue of, well, if you're not going to pay for it, we don't want to do it. But I don't think that's a real issue. I mean, even if the Fed said we will pay for everything, there are still going to be people who say we don't want to do it anyway. So what's your plans between now and May 31st of 2009? How do we prepare for what we're going to do the next step?
Through the chair and Senator Stevens, it's an excellent question, because really that comes to the entire point of the ongoing dialogue, is because clearly a second extension implies that we're going forward and we're going to do everything we can to comply. And I think, as you've heard from the testimony, in many ways we're already compliant. I think really the key part of this is where you get into data sharing and linking these databases, some of which that don't even exist today. And that's what we're going to be spending the next months. I mean, again, to put this in the context, we just got the final rules last month. And so we're going to be spending, we're working with the other 50 states, or the other 49 states, I'm sorry. We're part of AMVA, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Managers. And, you know, we're active in that group, just as Whitney mentioned, just finding best practices in what you're doing, irregardless of Real ID. So we're working with them. We're working with the congressional delegation. John Katz in the D.C. office and Larry Pursley are two individuals that are tracking this very closely. National Governors Association is going to be watching it. And I think with the passage of time, we'd be able to come back and talk to you and certainly have some meaningful discussions, even during the interim, if the committee, this committee or other groups of legislators are interested in doing that. We'll be working the issue, though, I can assure you that. And
we would be interested, Kevin, and I appreciate you offering that we could be a conduit to, you know, continuing the discussion, because that is the problem with the interim, is you sort of lose track right. of everything that's going on. So I appreciate that.
And Madam Chair, if I can, I guess, be so bold, but I know that you and your circles with state legislative groups may come back and be able to share with us what those entities are looking at as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Anything further for Kevin?
Just a global question,
yeah.
And maybe I missed it. Has the administration taken a position on this bill?
Through the chair, Senator French, we've not taken a formal position. You know, we've met with Senator Wilkowski and just expressed our concerns that we not do anything to compromise anything that we're currently doing that we think that makes sense. I think there is already a built-in safeguard here, because we don't have the funding to implement Real ID right now. We're either going to have to come back here for a state general fund or receipt of, you know, federal receipt authority if there's federal funds available, but it's going to come back before this body, because I'm here to tell you we can't do it with the money we have in the operating budget, because that's what we use to run the division. So one way or another, we're back before you to comply with Real ID, because it's going to take some money to do that.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, let's see here. Who else? Mike, R-S-T-E-R, spelling question mark. This is what I got from teleconferencing, so I don't know.
Correct. Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to speak. What I'd like to do is just make a few comments to address the issue of Real ID. Right now, 17 states have passed legislation opposing Real ID. of those, seven states have passed statutes simply opting out of Real ID. Right now, 15 states have legislation pending opposing Real ID, including yours. And why such a strong reaction to something that most people would just go, it's just an expansion of a driver's license? Well, I think that fundamentally, Real ID is un-American at a very core level. And I think that Real ID is a national ID card that would make, if we've read our history books, Stalin proud. As Stalin feared freedom, so does the Department of Homeland Security. Our founding fathers embraced freedom. They realized that it could bring terrorism. Well, people have always been willing to die for a cause and to kill for a cause, but they also saw the incredible benefits that transformed this country into something never seen before in history. It was a place that simply offered freedom, and with it, real opportunity. Stalin's paranoia is legendary. DHS is behaving in the same way. The DHS needs to feel in control of every individual, and Real ID is the means to that control. It is an internal passport containing your most private information, electronically encoded. You will be required to show it on demand. It will be remotely accessible to police and hackers. It will be part of a vast database network with your name, address, birth certificate, social security number, driving record, and much more. And it will be accessible without a search warrant. Real ID is different from a state-issued driver's license in that the feds are simply taking over. They are setting standards and creating networks linking all of the state databases. A government that feels it has to monitor and track the movement of its citizens is not a government of a free country anymore, but rather a government ripe for abuse. But, of course, that can't happen here.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I'm going to encourage, and we appreciate it. It's, if the folks remaining, I'm going to get to you. If you could just keep it to 2 minutes, and then that way we can go ahead and have the committee discussion and vote on the bill. Otherwise, we're rolling on into the weeks here. So if you support the bill and you could say so briefly why, that would be great. If you don't support it, briefly why. Next, I'll go to, yes, Senator Bundy.
The previous gentleman appears that he doesn't live in Alaska. I just wanted to share with him one of our fine Alaskan tenets. We don't give a damn how they do it outside.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Okay, Gary Lund. Mr. Lund?
Hello, Madam Chair. I'm representing myself.
Okay.
I would like to speak against Senate Bill 202.
Okay.
I speak Spanish. I'm aware of an illegal immigrant problem in Alaska. I stood behind a Immigration and Customs Enforcement man in the post office recently, and I asked him if there were a lot of illegal immigrants in Alaska, and he said, yeah, there was a lot. The number that's bandied around is 5,000. That's about 2,500 people, say adults, that are using false Social Security numbers in order to work. We just had an illegal immigrant sentenced to 11 years in federal prison last week for cocaine sale. There's a native lady here in town that was stabbed in the back several years ago by an illegal alien, and she's paralyzed from the waist down. In Delta Junction in the 1980s, there was a man that sold false agricultural statements that people had worked on farm to 60 illegal aliens for $3,000 each. Every day, according to what I've read, 12 Americans are murdered by illegal aliens. Every day, 13 Americans die in traffic accidents with drunk illegal aliens. And every day, 8 American children are molested by illegal aliens. The states have to push to identify people and until it gets a critical mass, until the federal government does something about it. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Gary, for your testimony. Okay, next, Kenneth Brown Cole.
No longer online.
Okay, no longer online. Frank Turney.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Senator Wilchowski and the Senate Affairs for bringing this forward. Madam Chair, McGuire, and Senators, I love my country, but I don't trust my own government. I love my freedoms and liberties that was given to all of us by our Creator, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Our founding father, George Mason, refused to sign the U.S. Constitution because there was no Bill of Rights to protect us from the overpowering federal government. Here we are today with this new so-called ID Act that violates our Fourth Amendment rights to privacy. This new Orwellian driver's license and identification will be embedded with a standard identifier data. It will rape our rights to privacy and turn our country into a socialistic, fascist country with no checks and balances. I support 202 to halt any expenditures that will pay for the importation of the so-called ID Act for Alaskans, and that includes any federal money to pay for it, and that should be amended to this bill. And I believe it's time to take your oath serious and stand up for the Fourth Amendment rights and exercise our Tenth Amendment of our Bill of Rights versus the federal government. This is a vicious attack on our right to privacy, and I think you should take a serious look at a good example of Montana opposing this act, and that's a good example for Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr.
I would like to include that in the interior here, last year, resolution number 4262 was introduced by Lloyd Hilling City Council opposing the act. It passed. Also last year, resolution 2007-11, Charlie Rex and Borough Assembly passed April 12, 2007. Also resolution 07-8 by Mayor Doug Isaacs and North Pole Mayor and City Council. All these three in the interior passed resolutions opposing this so-called ID Act of 2005, and you should have copies down there in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Turney. Mr. John Brading.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak.
And
I support the Alaska State Legislature for trying to not fund the Federal Real ID Act of 2005, as found in SB 202. But take a look at the stronger language in the Montana State Bill opposing the Federal Real ID Act of 2005. It has great merit. This Real ID Act is another relentless long train of abuse and assault on our U.S. freedoms. It is an instrument of totalitarianism that manipulates the people into servitude, an instrument to control human freedom. Without the free choice to travel, part of being human is robbed. Travel is inalienable and natural, existing before government. If this Real ID Act gets implemented, we the people will become we the cattle people. And in comes a more vicious system dedicated to robbing and abusing us. To not take a stand against this Real ID Act would be a gross failure to defend what the Constitution stands for. Remember Murphy's Law? If anything can possibly be used against you, eventually it will be. This ID Act, if implemented, will surely have hidden punishing consequences. Stop this continued assault on freedom. Time to take a stand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brady. Mr. Duffy Halliday? Feel free to say you agree with what he or she said.
Oh, just speak. Okay. I keep my comments brief.
Thank you.
I believe that a national ID goes against our U.S. Constitution. Whether we're talking about the U.S. Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, or the Bill of Rights, somewhere among those is a key phrase: citizens of the United States have the right to travel freely and uninhibited. Case in point, when the covered wagons headed west to populate the new territories, there was no license plates or ID numbers because our great-grandparents had the right to travel freely and uninhibited without interference from the federal government because of the citizens' right to the Constitution. Already in place, people are identified by six items: the state driver's license, Social Security, Internal Revenue keeps track of you, fingerprints, passports, and visas. I say enough is enough. These six identifications are enough. If there's problems, you need to fix those, but a national ID is not the way to go. The proposed national ID goes against the citizens' constitutional rights. The United States government's rights end where the citizens' rights begin. I certainly thank the legislature for Senate Bill 202, and I encourage you to come up with stronger language at a future date. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Halliday. Mr. David Akin?
I thank you for the chance to speak, and I don't have a whole lot to say, but I'm just here to stand up and for my freedoms and the freedoms of my children and my wife. I believe in Germany, there was a national ID system during World War II or prior to it. I'm not sure if it started out that way, and then it was abused by Hitler. It was abused it was used against to clean out the Jewish people, and I believe that that same abuse could happen in America or anywhere in the world that such ideas are propagated. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akin. Gloria
DeRocher. I'm pleased to hear that the representatives of Alaska finally listen to the people they represent. And I'm asking, whatever happened to the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their person, houses, papers, and effects shall not be violated. Every one of you is sworn to an oath, sworn to an oath to protect the Constitution and our Bill of Rights. It will be interesting to see who walks their talk among our legislators. This so-called Real ID Act of 2005 is another series of attacks on our liberties here in the Republic of the United States of America. Do you remember we are supposed to be a republic, don't you? Our forefathers knew what they were doing when they started us off as a republic to protect the rights of the citizens. That is the sole purpose of our government. A lot of people do not realize that this national database of information will cause what it will cause. For one, it will not make us safer. It puts every American's entire life onto one accessible hard drive, leaving the option for one computer programmer to break into the system and have access to every American's bank records, credit cards, health records, Social Security records, gun records, and place of residency. When I refuse a real ID card, I will be denied the right to work, denied the right to open a bank account, denied the right to board an airplane, denied the right to drive my truck, denied access to any and all federal property. One of the scariest parts of this Real ID Act comes from Chertoff himself saying the agency would not prevent the use of the card by private parties for non-government purposes. And finally, all the ultra-sensitive data on the card will not be encrypted, generally meaning a fourth grader could read the information on the card. This Real ID Act is a direct breach of the U.S. Constitution. 17 states have already enacted the legislation rejecting the Real ID Act, and I won't read all of them. I'm sure you know them. And today I hope that every one of you as senators oppose the Real ID Act because, as we all know, those who give up essential liberty for temporary safety deserve neither. And Benjamin Franklin spoke that. And I would like to encourage you to pursue Montana's plan of completely rejecting it, not just the financial aspect of it. This was written by a friend of mine, and I'm speaking it because I agree wholeheartedly with everything he wrote. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gloria. Schaefer Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for taking the time to hear from us. I support Senate Bill 202 and oppose the Real ID Act on principle. America is a young nation. America was a great nation, and America was a free nation. And it was the seed of human creativity, watered by freedom, that grew into the prosperity that made us the envy of the world overnight. But that freedom is eroding, and we are surrounded by threats, the threat of terror, the threat from the federal government to pull funding for things like roads and airports if we don't comply. Both are threats. Both are un-American. The Department of Homeland Security has made a promise to keep us secure that they cannot deliver. And they have demanded a price, our liberty, that we cannot pay. There is such a small benefit compared to the huge possibilities and almost certain abuse of this Real ID Act that it must be opposed tooth and nail. It is too great of a power to create and hand to unknown successors. We are not willing to sell off our freedoms that were bought with blood and riches for the small price of roads and airports or any other federal funding that is of no use to a people who are no longer free. If you support, now I'm speaking to the legislators who are listening, if you support the Real ID in your heart and cannot accept it as a matter of principle, I commend you. You have my support and the support of those I represent. Stay the course. Uphold your oath. If, on the other hand, you have given token opposition as you sell off our liberty little by little to maintain federal funding of programs that will be of no consequence to a people who are no longer free, then may your cowardly disservice to us all weigh heavily on your conscience. Please oppose anything that has to do with the Real ID Act and take a stronger, more courageous stance as Montana has set an example. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the last person I have online is Stephen Farrington. Mr. Farrington, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. I'd like to thank the Senate committee for hearing us, and I'd like to thank Senator Wilikowski for bringing this bill before you. I, for one, am very, very disappointed in my Republicans for not supporting this bill. I find it very disturbing that they're the strongest opposition to Senate Bill 202.
Which
I think
Republicans
you're going to find
are you
out
referring
in March
to?
At the state.
Mr. Farrington,
yes?
when you say that, who are you referring to?
I'm referring to Senator Bundy.
Okay.
And
I'll give him a chance to defend himself here.
Now, you were using plural, and I'm only a single Republican. So
you said the Republicans, so we were just clarifying. Okay, continue.
Okay. And I'd like you all to know that in March at the state convention, the Republicans of Alaska will let the Republican Party know, if you're interested in towing the party line, just where the party line stands in accordance to the Real ID Act. And I believe that most people come to Alaska for privacy. I'd encourage, I think the sponsor's statement for Senate Bill 202 is beautiful, and I agree 100%, but I think the body of the bill itself is weak, and my constructive criticism would be that there are many people preparing for civil disobedience along with the Real ID Act. You've heard from a couple of them today, and I would appreciate it if Alaska legislature set an example and not just refused funding from the federal government, but refuse the Real ID Act on principle. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bundy, do you want to respond? Good. Okay, so it is 10:25. Is there a motion? Senator Friend.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that Senate Bill number 202 be passed out of this committee onto the next committee referral with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Objection.
Senator Bundy,
speaking to my objection. Well, there was a lot of heartfelt testimony. I'll respect their right to have their heartfelt opinions if they'll respect mine to have mine. When it comes to hewing to a party line, I don't hew to the Communist Party line, the Nazi Party line, or the Republican Party line. I make my judgments based on my own common sense. And like I said, I don't know anything more American than to look at a set of facts and disagree without finding the other person either evil or stupid.
Very well said. Okay, and do you want to maintain your objection?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator French.
Yes.
Senator Green. Senator Bundy.
No.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Chair McGuire.
Yes. And so, Senate Bill 202 has passed out of the Senate State Affairs Committee, and we are adjourned.